Ray Kaplan joins us now, the attorney who is most expert on student aid and reducing your student debt. Ray, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm great. Thank you.
Incidentally, I wanted to talk to you about FAFSA forms and the latest on student debt that so many people carry. But can you just answer a question for me about that text you sent me late last week?
Yes, I'm ready for it.
Well, you sent me a text that one of your clients, I don't know if it was a WGN radio listener or not, but somebody reached out to you and they had some student debt and they wanted to see about could they get it lowered or reduced or eliminated. And you did some work for them and you got their balance due down to zero, if I recall from your text. What was the amount they started at when they reached out to you? How much student debt did they have?
So they started off with $346,000 in federal student loans. And you're right, we just got the notice that the loan balance is now zero, which is great. So basically what happened was that particular borrower had, I believe, $60,000 or $70,000 per year for her child's federal, for federal Parent PLUS loans. So these are loans that the parent borrower can take out to pay for their child's college education. And she was unaware that she qualified for public service loan forgiveness. And under this new Biden administration executive order, that's the one that expires April 30th, we were able to get her previous years working at a hospital here in Illinois to count under that the new guidelines, and so we were able to get her entire loan balance forgiven in one fell swoop. So it's really fantastic, and it's also a tax-free forgiveness. So that whole $346,000 forgiven all at once, and she won't even have to pay federal taxes on it. So really knowing the law when it comes to federal loans can really save you so much money.
But in order to get that forgiveness, you need to have made consistent payments for 10 years if you're in the public sector, right? Had she been paying 10 years?
Well, under this new executive order, and this is, again, the one I keep really wanting everybody to know about just because it's not getting that much press for some reason, but it expires April 30th. But to answer your question, no. For the last 3 years, like everybody else, her loans were in forbearance. So she really was only making payments for about 7 of those years. And then 3 years of the COVID forbearance. But we were able to get those 3 years also to apply for public service loan forgiveness so that she reached that 120 months and then was able to get the loan balance forgiven.
Okay. But so it did come to 10, even though the math is a little funny, 7 plus 3, even though for the 3 she didn't have to make payments. They pretend that you did. But
right.
If you had made payments for 7 years, how does the total come to $346,000? How did she get that much student debt?
Well, it's a good question. So if you look at, about $60,000 a year, that's at least about around $240,000. And then what a lot of people don't know is that these student loans start to accrue interest as soon as they're dispersed. And I think she also had some loans from back when she went to undergrad. So interest has been accruing on these loans for at least decades. And then when you make payments, often, depending on the type of payment plan you choose, you might be choosing a payment plan where you get a really low monthly payment, but it's really not enough to cover the interest that is accruing on the loans, which is what happened here. So she did pay a pretty substantial amount back, but because of the way interest accrues on these loans, the balance really grows. And thank goodness she had public service loan forgiveness and this executive order. But even if the executive order had not existed, she would just have to make payments for about another 3 years. And then the balance, we could have gotten those forgiven at that point, just the executive order.
As I understand you, Ray, so say $60,000 a year for 4 years. She goes to school, $240,000. Now she's making some sort of payments, maybe the minimum, but the $240,000 grew to $346,000 over the course of 7 or 10 years?
It might have been a little bit longer than that, but yes, $346,000.
Did you see the John Oliver piece where he talked a couple of weeks ago about the student debt situation?
I believe I did. There have been so many pieces on student loans, right? But I can't really recall. Refresh my memory.
Well, he was just talking a little bit about this phenomenon and how it is that we have encouraged kids to go to school. We've made it easier to borrow money, but the college costs have been going up and up and up as well. One of the reasons college costs are going up is because colleges know kids can borrow money. And he said that the Parent PLUS loans don't have an income cap. You can borrow an unlimited amount of money, regardless of the amount of money that you make on a Parent PLUS loan. Does that sound about right?
So that is true. The federal loan system is very complicated because it is basically need-based. And the Department of Education views students going to undergrad as dependents all the way up until the age of 24. So it doesn't matter who claims them as a dependent or if they're not really dependent. The Department of Ed thinks of them that way. And the reason for that is that they know students are really not a great credit risk, right? These are young people just starting off in life. They don't have a lot of credit. So who is to fill in the gap? If your student gets about $6,000 or $7,000 in loans and then hopefully some scholarships, I don't think people make enough use out of really great sites like Scholarship Owl, and there are some other ones that curate the scholarships available for students. But the balance, if your tuition, let's say, is $60,000 and your student only gets $10,000, well, that means there's $50,000 there that needs to be covered in tuition, room and board. So often the parents will take out a federal Parent PLUS loan. Now, he's correct in that you can take out a Parent PLUS loan even if you don't have income at the moment, because they are loosely credit based. They're not based on the parent's income, but the payments are based on the parent's income. So very often that leads to kind of crazy results where a parent can take out very large Parent PLUS loans and only have to pay a fraction back, where if a parent borrower who is making more money takes out the Parent PLUS loans, they will often pay back the entire balance plus interest.
Oliver had a guy on who is 80 years old, and he still had another 20 years or so to go on paying his kid's loan, a Parent PLUS loan. And then he kind of chuckled, and Oliver said, that's the chuckle of a guy who knows he isn't going to have to pay off that loan because he'll be dead. But he also mentioned that bankruptcy does not discharge student loans. And he said it's, which makes sense or doesn't make sense when you think about it this way. He said, so if you go gambling or if you run stupid businesses that are had no chance and you get into debt, now you have to declare bankruptcy. Whatever your failings are, legitimate or otherwise, you declare bankruptcy and your debt can be discharged. But we don't do that with student debt, which is maybe a more honorable way to get into debt. At least you're trying to get an education and get ahead in life. Put that way, it doesn't seem to make much sense to me, Ray.
Yeah, I understand. So that it used to be the law that you could get rid of student loans in bankruptcy. That was before the BAPCA Act, the bankruptcy legislation that passed in, I believe it was 2005, that changed the bankruptcy code so that you could no longer eliminate student loan debt. Well, they made it very difficult. And I would say today, even though most student loans are non-dischargeable, we generally can get a discharge of student loans in about 30% of the cases, because there are exceptions under the rules to have your loans discharged, both private and more rarely federal loans. But I will say that the federal statute that governs federal loans is pretty generous when it comes to both payment plans and forgiveness options. At some point, most federal loans, if you know what you're doing, will be forgiven. It's just a question of when. And then what people don't know is that you have to pay federal income taxes on the amount of loan forgiveness that you get. So oftentimes people will ask me, well, the interest continues to accrue on federal Parent PLUS loans. And that's true. The interest will continue to accrue on those loans, and then you might get those loans forgiven, perhaps under a disability application where the doctor signs off that you're not able to work and you get the loans forgiven. But you are going to then have to pay federal taxes on that loan balance, which has now grown maybe from $100,000 to $200,000. You have to pay taxes on that $200,000 in loan forgiveness as though it were income for that year.
So what are you saying about that?
So what I'm saying is that the federal government will get paid is ultimately how this works. Even if your loans are going to get forgiven, you're going to have to pay taxes on the forgiven balance.
Well,
so often people get kind of irritated about loan forgiveness, but it's not like a get out of jail free card. You're
but the woman you started
on those forgiven.
The woman you told us about at the beginning of this conversation, who had been paying for 7 years and 3 years of forbearance, gets her to 10 years, 120 payments. She still owed $346,000. Did that count as income that she had to pay taxes on?
No. So there's an exception for public service loan forgiveness. So if you get your loans forgiven under that section of the statute, that is a tax-free forgiveness. But if you're in the private sector or retired, you will have to pay taxes on
okay.
most types of loan forgiveness.
Okay. Well, you know, I get frustrated by a lot of this. A, that every time I talk to you, well, there's another thing about another thing about another thing people have to know. No fault of your own. I'm glad you know it. But it doesn't seem right to me that we treat one student one way and another student another way. Ray Kaplan's on the phone. She is the debt relief expert. You can find out more from her at financialrelief.com, financialrelief.com. I'll give her phone number in a second. Ray, what about FAFSA forms? What's changed and what do I need to know about those?
Oh, boy. Okay. So there have been a lot of changes to FAFSA. So just a quick summary. Okay. So some changes required by the FAFSA Simplification Act. Mostly these are positive changes. So it includes a decrease in the complexity and the number of questions asked. It also increases the income protection allowance and expands the Pell Grant eligibility. And outside contributions are no longer being treated as the student's untaxed income. So if you have, let's say, a parent who has a 529 account for their child, it's not going to count against that child when they're applying for loans or work study programs. Some of the changes will have an adverse effect on families and may reduce your aid eligibility, such as they're eliminating the discount for multiple students in college at the same time. If parents are divorced, now just one parent's tax return has to be included, and that is the parent where the child spends a majority of their time. So it used to be for divorced parents, it would be both parents' income into consideration, and now just the one parent where the child spends the majority of their time. So some of these changes have been rolled out, but it is creating a delay in understanding or getting the results back for how much aid each student is eligible for work study programs and Pell Grants. The amount of the Pell Grant was also increased as well. I think that now the maximum, I think $7,900 to maybe $9,400, if I'm remembering correctly.
I just want to read from the Wall Street Journal. The new FAFSA was supposed to make colleges more accessible, but only 32% of high school seniors had submitted a FAFSA form by March 15th, compared to 47% the same time last year. Applications by students who attended low-income high schools were down 38%, and they said there are glitches in it, so that people are having to wait longer. It's more complicated. Do you agree with all that?
Yes, there are some glitches as it's being rolled out, no question about that, but it is open and you can go right to studentaid.gov and fill out your FAFSA. It's open now, and so now's the time to do it.
Couple quick questions from our listeners. Is there any forgiveness for parents who took out loans to send their kids to college and are now retired and have reduced incomes but are still paying on the loans? I currently signed up for the SAVE program.
Okay, so if you are a parent plus borrower and you have federal Parent PLUS loans, you're not eligible for the SAVE plan unless you do something called a double loop consolidation, which is rather complicated, but can be done. For the most part, people who have federal Parent PLUS loans are only going to be eligible for an income contingent repayment plan, which bases the payment on a formula that's about 20% of the parent's adjusted gross income. There are other payment plans that may get you a lower payment, but to answer this borrower's question, there are forgiveness programs such as the disability section of the statute. So if you are retired and you have some sort of medical illness or ailment, and they recently loosened up the regulations on this one too, used to be that you had to have a medical doctor sign the application. Let's say you have really bad arthritis or back pain, yeah, or some sort of, you know, issue, and your doctor can state that because of that, you're not going to be able to resume work. Then you can get your entire loan balance forgiven in one fell swoop. So very often people who are retired can get their entire loan balance forgiven if they have something like that going on. But they recently loosened up the regs so that now if you have, you can have a DO, doctor of osteopathy, sign it, or a licensed nurse practitioner. So there's a little bit of flexibility there. That All right. also will probably be taxable, though.
Okay. I'm out of time, Ray. Ray Kaplan, okay. You can reach her. Well, we've got more questions than we have time for. That always happens. You can always call Ray's office, 312-294-8989, 312-294-8989, or click on financialrelief.com. Ray, very helpful. Thanks for your time again today.
Thanks so much, John. You too. Thank you.